my book covers the late 1970s, which I consider to be the last years of the great Senate. I think we had a great Senate in this country from the early 1960s through the 1970s. For a period of about almost 20 years, we had a Senate that was a progressive force, and it was on the cutting edge of every important legislative issue and every important battle in the country. You can't think about the major issues of those times, civil rights, the Vietnam War, Watergate, energy, environmental legislation, without thinking of the Senate in the forefront. Many of the names of those senators, Humphrey and Dirksen, Mansfield, Baker, Javits, they still resonate in their states and in Washington. And they worked for the national interest in a way that was bipartisan and characterized with mutual respect and trust and a commitment to the Senate as a body for collective action, a lot of qualities that we don't see today.
So what do you think has happened in those intervening years?
I think it's happened in stages. The 1980 election, in my mind, shattered the great Senate of the 60s and the 70s. A huge exodus of experienced, progressive, Democratic senators and some liberal Republicans like Javits, replaced by neophytes who really didn't believe in the Senate or the government when they first got there. Many of them, the Republicans who came in 1981, arrived with no political accomplishments and left 6 years later with their record intact. But the Senate made a pretty good comeback in the mid to late 1980s, started working again in a bipartisan, constructive way. Then in the 90s, I think it headed down, and I think we've had a 20-year downward spiral, largely characterized by the Republican move to the right and a willingness by Senate leaders, Republican leaders, to run the Senate in a very hyper-partisan way.
So you think it's only on the Republican side that's caused this problem?
You can always find instances where you're not happy or I'm not happy with Democrats or Democratic leaders, but I think it is disproportionately a Republican problem. What you would see if you look at the sweep of the last 20 to 30 years, you see Democratic Senates and Democratic senators working with Republican presidents, but you see Republican senators and their leaders stopped working with Democratic presidents, most dramatically with President Obama, but it was also true with Bill Clinton.
Well, I guess one thing you're offering us, Mr. Shapiro, is that there's some evidence that the Senate isn't necessarily have to be a place where bills go to die, a place of gridlock. It wasn't always thus. Is there some hope that we can return to the 60s and 70s era type Senate for those that want to? And of course, there are people that think it's good that that there's a place that puts brakes on legislation.
Well, I distinguish between the Senate as a place to carefully consider legislation, to cool things down, to give it real extended debate. I consider those things to be consistent with the Senate's historic tradition, and you saw that in the 60s and the 70s. What I don't think is consistent with the Senate as it evolved as a force in the 60s and 70s is absolute obstruction, and that's what we've been seeing. The senators that I write about, Democratic and Republican, were committed to the Senate as an institution, and that meant taking collective action, give and take, mutual respect, principled compromise. Those qualities are what's missing in today's Senate, and I think we saw that expressed most vividly recently when Olympia Snowe announced her decision to retire. A frustration that had given way to almost, I think, a disgust with what the institution had become.
We were speaking with Ira Shapiro, author of The Last Great Senate, just published by Public Affairs. Now, let's talk about the parochial interest of our listeners who are mostly contractors and federal managers. Recollect how the senators you worked with might have dealt with federal agencies in terms of oversight and how they're regulated.
Well, there's always a natural tension between the legislative branch and the executive branch. And some of the oversight was vigorous, and certainly cheap shots were not unknown. You'll recall William Proxmire, the senator from Wisconsin, who invented the Golden Fleece Award and made fun of quite a few programs in pointing out their, what he thought of as their deficiencies. But the difference was that the Senate in the 60s and the 70s were the architects of most of these programs. They believed in the programs. They believed in the need for it. And the federal employees, senior federal managers, knew that they felt that way. So as a consequence, there was a much more positive relationship between the Senate and the executive branch. And senators and Senate committee staff really knew the executive branch officials who were running these programs. And what you would see, and I distinguish between the early 60s and the late 70s, for instance, because largely because of budget problems and some anti-government feelings across the country. But even in the late 70s, the Senate would try to reform the civil service system and set up inspectors general to make the programs run better. But they also offered flexible working hours and part-time professional opportunities to the workforce because they thought that was important.
All right. So what do you see ahead? Is there any chance, looking at the Senate as it's made up, looking at the upcoming elections, do you see hope that some kind of compromise or bipartisanship might return?
Well, I think it's easier to be pessimistic than optimistic, but I believe that the senators have to take it upon themselves to rise above the vitriolic political culture they live in today. I certainly believe it's harder to be a senator now than it was in the 60s and the 70s. The demands of fundraising, the 24-hour news media, a political conversation on the internet, there are a lot of difficulties. But I was asked whether I expect the senators to rise above it, and the answer is yes. I want them to be senators and not just partisan operatives. The senators that I knew would not have tolerated the decline of the institution. If they needed to change the rules, they would have done it. If they needed to replace their leaders, they would have done it. But mostly they wouldn't have been in a partisan knife fight all the time.
To drill down a little farther on that, you mentioned a minute ago the retirement of Olympia Snow.
Yeah.
I wonder if you think that in order to get bipartisan legislation, to get bipartisan compromise, you need those sorts of moderates in both parties, and if we have a political system that can produce those sorts of senators going forward.
Well, I think Senator Snow's retirement is both reflects the decline of the Senate and deepens it. I think it's a terrible loss. I know some Democrats are happy about it because they think they'll win the seat, but I think it's a loss. Yes, you do need moderates like that, and it is frustrating in extreme to see that she looked at her where the Senate was and decided she couldn't continue. It's very understandable if somebody works as hard as she does day after day and finds the Senate not working. I'd like to see the senators on both sides view 2012 as a time to look at seriously at the Senate rules and how it's working. Right now, we don't know who will be in the majority or the minority in November. That's an ideal time to try to say, how would the Senate work fairly to the majority and the minority party and the individuals and the president who has to get his government in place? Right now, the Senate is dysfunctional, and the senators are not pitiless. They're not people that should be pitied, or they're not helpless to change the situation. They have to step up to it.